spot, yeah. Came a long way from back in the day. We did it for no pages. Rhyme and hit the hay and sleep. Wake up, write another rhyme. Hit the park after dog, drop the beat one time. That's when shit was real. No phonies, no baloney, just the homie. Mics and wheels are still. Back up from the roof and plugged in the street light. Everything right, jam over, street fight. Back to the lab, I grab my pen and pad. Raw lyrics, make a slur and a scat. Had no dinero, enough get four chicken wings and rice. A 40 ounce of nickel bag to get nice. Now I might make a million. It's still sun, it makes the heart pump. You know what I want. Fat beats for my rhymes. Mad clips for my nines. A ill posse and my name up in lights and I in need. I'm a J Fudd with the mansion and the yacht. Brand new Glock, non-stop hip hop. Remote control boombox, lamping on my dress. Off the guard, ain't no less as the pressure comes to test ya. 100-pound weight around the neck. Daily, enough treasons, enough reasons like Philip Bailey. Can't get enough of that funky stuff. Rhyming astronomical, original shit is phenomenal. Heat up the kettle, put the pedal to the metal. Speed like racing, treat you like a whack rhyme in erasure. Right off the paper, roll a big fat split. 4/5 on the hip. Heineken in the grip, shit, I'm ready. Get the keys for the Jeep. Let's bounce, cruise avenues, get some grooves and sing the blues with the funk master flex cassette in the deck. I'm in effect, I move my neck while sun gets wrecked. Oh, what a feeling, I'm on the wheels of stealing. I snatch up some skins for some sexual healing. Everything's coaching, copacetic, groovy. Hip-hop moves me, screws me. I'm letting off like an Uzi. The first step to newsy, you bruise me. Now I'm choosy before I start to freak it like a floozy. I want to get big, get big, true stunt.
These arms of mine, they're lonely,
lonely,
so lonely,
lonely,
and feeling blue. These arms of mine, they're yearning,
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 yearning
from not seeing you.
And welcome to the Pedal Revolutionary Show. Today is Thursday. It's Alternative Thursday. And so, of course, you're hearing the voice of cyclists across the Lower Mainland coming at you from the green, still green campuses of UBC. I hope everybody's had a great summer. It's starting to get to that time once again where we'll have to contemplate a long, beautiful, wet experience on the roads. But we're not there yet. Although the weekend will unfortunately be rainy, it's a good excuse to kind of get back in touch with your platypus roots. So we're going to be talking today about a very bittersweet concept for cyclists, and that is peak oil. It brings with it some blessings and some curses. So we're going to be talking about a movie that's going to be showing tomorrow night called Escape from Suburbia. It's the sequel in the trilogy about peak oil and the effects of that on global economy and local communities. The first movie was called The End of Suburbia, and it's directed by Greg Greene. You may or may not have seen it. It won a lot of awards and got a lot of local grassroots showings, and this is no exception for the second movie. Escape from Suburbia is going to be showing tomorrow night. That's Friday, August the 17th, 7:30 p.m. at the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. That's 158 East 10th Avenue. That's 10th and Main. Tickets are $10 in advance or $12 at the door. Or you may be one of the two people whom we give a free ticket to today. We'll be doing that a little bit later in the show. So we're going to be talking a bit to Franklin Lopez of Submedia TV. He's going to be giving us kind of his take on peak oil and also Escape from Suburbia. And why we'd also like to ask everybody, if you have questions or comments, please give us a call at the studio. It's 604-UBC-CITR. My name is Ifni, and I will be your host today. And I'm joined by my colleague and friend and compatriot, David Ripa. David, how you doing?
I'm good, and I just realized that I completely did not play our theme song today. And
yeah, you're breaking out of the mold.
Well, you know, we get all these angry phone calls from our one listenership.
And they'll call repeatedly.
Exactly, yes.
Doing different voices.
Yeah.
Well, that song was actually These Arms of Mine, as you guys probably noticed. It wasn't Roots Roundup. And when we say These Arms of Mine, I guess we could be referring to either the arms race that may accompany the extraction of the remainder of oil in the world as people fight over those last black and greasy drops. We could also be talking about our love affair with the car. And I'd like to say a couple of things. If you're out there right now riding your bicycle listening to headphones, please at least take out one headphone so that you cannot get killed on the roads. Sound, of course, is your ally. If you're out there driving around in your car today, hopefully you're not alone, because driving by yourself, commuting, could be seen by the rest of us as extremely selfish behavior. So turn to your friend next to you, hold their hand, because you're in for a show that may engender in you some feelings of unease or fear about the coming days. You may also want to, if you are a driver, take the next opportunity that makes itself available to say thank you to other cyclists on the road, because they're doing some great work. They are keeping oil prices lower longer. And they're also keeping congestion down. So actually, they're making your day-to-day commute more pleasurable. And please, everybody, try to get along on the roads. I know it ain't easy, especially in these days of rev line construction. The other thing that you may want to do when you're next time you're talking to a cyclist is thank them for the wonderful paved roads we've got. Cyclists were actually the first lobbyists for pavement. Of course, they had a very pressing need, and that was their bums, because they were riding bone shakers. Non-pneumatic tires certainly led to action in the streets to get rid of potholes. Anyway, that's my piece. That's all I want to say about that. And again, you're listening to 101.9 FM. This is the Pedal Revolutionary Show. And I believe that we are being joined now by a gentleman named Franklin Lopez. Franklin, are you there?
That's my name.
That's your name. How you doing?
I'm chilling. How are you feeling?
I'm okay. It was a bit of a mad rush to get here, but we're in a studio now. What's new with you?
What's new with me? I'm pretty pooped. I've been busting my butt to get this event going and to spread some truth and hopefully some hope and strengthen our community so we can deal with the situation when the poop hits the fan.
Cool. And I'm really happy that you sent out a really quite nice personal email as part of your publicity, just kind of talking about how you got involved in showing this film and what it means to you. Before we get into kind of you and your experience and some of the more meaty aspects of the movie, do you want to maybe explain for people? I know the term peak oil gets thrown around quite a bit, and I think we all know what it means, but maybe just to clarify, can you kind of go through some of its main pieces?
Yeah, in short, peak oil is the halfway point in oil production, whether it be of an individual country or whether it be worldwide. What these films, End of Suburbia and Escape from Suburbia, speak of mostly is the world peak, which basically, when you hit 50% or have the halfway point in oil extraction, it just becomes harder and harder to get the oil out, so you have to invest more money into getting it out. and it becomes more expensive. And we're basically feeling the effects of that right now. The price of a barrel, I see in 2001 was $25 a barrel. In the 1970s, it was like, you know, I think $10 a barrel. And right now, it's peaked about $79 a barrel. But oil futures are already going for $100. $100 a barrel, and that's for next year. So basically, the price of oil, we already know, is going to hit $100 a barrel. And you know, the peak oil folks out there, including myself, are just basically worried because everything is tied to oil. Just everything in our modern lives is tied to oil. Just, you know, just look around your house, look around the roads, look inside your refrigerator. You know, that food that you eat was probably fertilized with fossil fuels. It was probably...
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of gross.
Yeah. No, the fertilizers are fossil fuel-based, and the pesticides are also fossil fuel-based. And then all the machinery of the industrial type of agriculture that North America does is all fossil fuel-based. So, you know, look at your food, look at the plastics. Everything got to you through some sort of transport that is almost certainly fossil fuel-based. So, and, you know, when the price of oil goes up, the price of everything goes up. And so what happens is that, not to bore anybody to death here.
we need to frighten them today, frankly.
Oh, okay. Well, that's my job then. But what happens is that there's also other factors, right? You got China and India that are also competing for dwindling supplies of oil. And right now what we're seeing is that demand and supply and demand are there's not a lot of wiggle room. They're basically right there. There's just enough supply to meet the demand. But then you see, like, if anything happens, if somebody in Nigeria blows up a pipe, that just sends, you know, that just sends the market into, gives a little shock to the market, and the price of oil goes up.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's it. You know, if Ahmadinejad in Iran says something inflammatory, the price of oil goes up. So, you know, the market is definitely jittery when it comes to this, and anything can send the price of oil going up. Today, the price of oil went up because there's hurricane season starting. Well, yeah, because there's refineries in the Gulf and, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, I was being facetious a little bit earlier, and I said that cyclists, of course, are keeping the price of oil down because we're not depleting it as quickly as we could be if we were driving. But I'd like to ask you for maybe a bit of analysis here. How artificial are gas prices? I mean, if we talk about hurricane season and the president of Iran coming out and saying something, well, how much does it actually have to do with the supply and the reserves and what's left and our access to it? And how much does it have to do with politics and, you know, the perception of how much oil we have left?
I think it's kind of like a mix of both. I mean, I'm definitely not an expert in a lot of this, but I think part of it is psychological. Also, I think that, you know, oil companies have a lot to gain from a lot of this, but I don't think, I mean, oil companies until recently were blowing up their numbers to basically say that we have plenty, and it was basically a way to make more money for them. But a few have come out, and they're kind of jumping on the bandwagon saying, like, you know, we do have to switch to other energies, and, you know, companies like British Petroleum, that, you know, it's a pretty horrible company, but I'm not going to get into that right now, has changed their name to Beyond Petroleum, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I was going to say their new ads, they call themselves Beyond Petroleum, which is the first time I saw that, I'm glad I was sitting down.
It does make you laugh. It's just kind of like the algorization of BP, I guess. You know,
the algorization
of BP. I just made that up. By the way,
is it like an algorithm? An algorithm?
yeah. Algorithm. An inconvenient gas price.
Okay.
So I don't know. I just kind of went on a tangent here, but
it's all good. Our show is all about tangents.
Actually. Oh, really? Yeah, okay, yeah, great. Sure. Then you want to go for a bike ride?
Yeah, let's go for a bike ride. Conceptually speaking, let's talk about. I want to know your opinion of Al Gore. Lay it on us.
My opinion of Al Gore is that he might have some good intentions, but you know, the record from him is kind of grim. For many, many years, he was basically supported by the Occidental Oil Company. Mm-hmm. And the Occidental Oil Company is a company that basically destroyed very sensitive ecological areas in South America. And while Al Gore was vice president, the I can't remember the name of the of the Aborigines in South America, the Ua, I think it was the Ua Indians, tried to speak to him through different channels, and he basically ignored them. And, you know, this is the man who is the, you know, global warming evangelist right now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, those are the hard questions that he needs to answer. He needs to come forth and say, like, why didn't I stop, you know, the destruction of these environmentally sensitive areas where, according to his film, he's been preaching this gospel of global warming since the 70s. So if he's aware that, you know, the rainforest, for instance, is one of the things that we need to basically keep alive to actually survive as a species on this planet, then I find it very hypocritical of him to, like, you know, to come out and say all this stuff right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not to mention the fact that, you know, he owns stock in the Occidental Petroleum Company. And when we look at global warming, you know, we can totally say that petroleum is a big part of him. And he says it himself. So he's a politician. And in the end, I don't trust politicians. So I really find it very suspect, some of the things that he's doing. I really don't know for sure if he has money in alternative energy or if he's trying to sell us more light bulbs. I don't know, but it's just one of those things that when you look at his political career, it's just he's got some definitely skeletons in the closet there.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting too, because I know in An Inconvenient Truth, of course, he's driving everywhere, catching jets here and there, and of course he's using Apple computers, which are notorious for their planned obsolescence. And so interesting things, all of them. Speaking of presidents, I know one of the things that I read mentioned in relationship to escape from suburbia was that, as if we needed another reason to hate Ronald Reagan, apparently Jimmy Carter had solar panels installed in the White House, and then, of course, Reagan, when he got in, he actually dismantled them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And during the Reagan era is when we saw the return the big ass American cars, and that was the start, and, you know, and now it just all continued through the Bush years and through the Clinton years, and now, you know, we're in the era of the massive SUV. So, you know, that all kind of ended. The compact cars kind of ended with Carter, and then we enter the era of Republicans and fake Democrats. And yeah, we're in the situation we're in. And Gore was a big part of that.
Interesting. Well, let's go listen to a song. I know we've been talking a bit about the rainforest, and let's play a bit of a tribute to that. Can you hang on, and we'll get back with you in a minute, Frank?
For you, I'll hang on.
Oh, you're fabulous. So we're going to listen to a song called Brazil by Pink Martini.
When stars were entertaining June, recalling thrills of our love, there's one thing I am certain of: return I will to old Brazil. Thank you.
Someone driving through suburbia should take a good look around, record the memory, because we may never see anything like it again. The realities coming down at us in the 21st century really are that we're going to have to scale down virtually all the daily activities that go into everyday life. The way we do business, the way we do farming, the way we travel, the kind of habitations that we make for ourselves, and that's going to come as a great shock to America. The expectation through really most of American history has always been there will always be more. There'll always be more land, there'll always be more wealth, there'll always be more business, and finally, that there will be more energy.
We have a serious problem. America is addicted to oil.
The whole American story and the industrial story are jointly bumping up against this new wall of limits that really they can't cope with.
And welcome back to the Pedal Revolutionary Show. We're joined today by the lovely and talented Franklin Lopez. Hello, Frank.
What's up?
Same as usual. The sky is still up. It's not quite falling just yet. If you'd like to see information about the movie that we're discussing, you can go to the website for Submedia. It's www.submedia.tv/escape. And so again, today we're talking about the movie Escape from Suburbia, which is going to be, it's the Vancouver premiere tomorrow night, showing at 7:30 p.m. August the 17th, Friday. That's the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. That's at 10th and Main. Tickets are $10 in advance, $12 at the door. You can buy tickets through the website. You can also phone in a little bit later in the program to win a couple of tickets that we're going to be giving away. Tell me, we just played a little clip from the movie, and we also played a lovely song called Brazil.
That's one of my favorite movies.
Oh, I know. I love that movie. For anyone out there who has not seen the movie Brazil, directed by Terry Gilliam, please go and see it. It's fabulous. I lived in Tokyo, and having seen the movie Brazil, I don't know, I was never quite the same walking in the underground train tunnels. With all the ducts all over the place, it's pretty interesting. Of course, Brazil, at this point, you know, there are lots of alternatives being proposed for the getting the methadone of oil. And so, of course, we're looking at things like what are some of the alternatives that are being discussed there?
Well, the Brazil story is actually kind of sad because Brazil has become, according to them, oil independent, but they've done this by creating a massive infrastructure for ethanol production, and in order for them to grow the raw material, i.e. biomass, I think they use sugar cane, but they use something else, and it's just escaping me right now. They got to chop down part of the Amazon basin to actually grow this stuff, so that people can drive their damn cars. So that's just definitely not a solution. I mean, biofuels are definitely one of the things that are a big part of the problem.
So it's not only is it a crutch, but it's actually quite destructive.
It's quite destructive, and it's not only happening in Brazil. It's also happening in Indonesia that has a massive rainforest, and they're cutting I forget the exact statistic, but, you know, a few football fields, a few lengths of football fields every day of the Amazon, of the Indonesian rainforest, so they can grow palms for palm oil, so they can make biodiesel. So, you know, it's solutions that seem benign at the time when they come up, but then when you industrialize them and you start actually destroying more nature, then it's even worse.
And in a sense, the irony is kind of staggering, right? Because we're going to be looking at real problems in food transport and food production, because a lot of our agricultural land has unfortunately been paved over or used for other for industrial applications. And yet here they are saying, well, let's just turn food into fuel. And I wonder how much cleaner it is compared to the traditional fossil fuels. As far as its burning?
Well, what a lot of the biofuels proponents say is that it's a closed carbon circuit, right, a cycle, because, you know, the plants absorb the CO2, and then, you know, you make it into a biofuel, and you burn it, and then you plant it more plants to actually, you know, capture that CO2 that was emitted. So, you know, supposedly it's a closed arc, a closed circle or cycle. But there's one huge thing, and especially in the States, a lot of the ethanol is being made from corn. There's several problems with that. One is corn is heavily subsidized. And for those of you who don't know much about NAFTA, when NAFTA went into effect, the trade barriers that basically blocked that cheap subsidized corn from entering into the Mexican market got taken down. So that cheap corn basically went down there and destroyed the market for Mexican corn. So now the poor Mexicans whose staple food is the corn tortilla are buying corn tortillas that are made with the cheap corn. What happens is now Bush, for the past several years, has been pushing legislation for corn ethanol. So all these farmers are just furiously getting into that racket. So now that the Mexican corn market is destroyed and they're kind of dependent on the U.S. corn market, now they're paying triple the price for corn tortillas than they did, you know, a couple years ago, and they're spending pretty close to 50% of their monthly income on food. So in that sense, you know, if we as a civilization collapse, we got exactly what we deserve, because we chose to drive our damn SUVs than to feed people. And the same thing is happening with wheat.
Franklin, let's make a deal. I'll stop driving my SUV to work if you stop driving your SUV to work. Are you in?
That's a deal.
David, are you in? Are you in? Just nod. Yeah? Right on. Awesome. So you heard it here first. This is a first for us. And it'll be archived for posterity. All three of us are here from now on. We're going to park our SUVs. That's it.
Yeah, for good.
For good. I retire it. I'm going to retire my Hummer, too, I think. And you mentioned wheat, and I know there's talk about hydrocarbons as well. Can you comment on those? Because they are particularly filthy.
Hydrocarbons.
Yeah. In my understanding, there's going to be a switch. As we run out of really easy to access fossil fuels, we're going to be switching to a dirtier forms as well.
Well, I don't quite understand that, but I know for sure that now, for instance, in Alberta, there's a huge expanse of what they call tar sands, mm-hmm. which are basically, as I understand it, the sands that have oil encrusted in them, mm-hmm. and they basically need to inject steam, and so steam was made by water and heat, and mm-hmm. so you're basically taking water that could be used for drinking, and then you're using natural mm-hmm. gas to make that steam. So you're using more fossil fuels to kind of break down those tar sands and extract that oil
right.
from that.
Let me just interrupt you and say, if there's anybody out there who would like to call in and make a comment or ask a question about what we're talking about, or if you have a cycling event that you'd like to announce, please give us a call at 604-UBCCITR. You're listening to 101.9 FM, and we're talking today about the end of convenience, the end of selfish convenience, maybe not permanent convenience. And so one thing I think that's really interesting about this trilogy is that, you know, the first one was really doomy gloomy, and the second one is a bit of a divergence from that. Do you want to talk a little bit about the second movie, Escape from Suburbia, compared to the first one?
Yeah, it's I think the first one got a lot of flack for having the last 10 minutes be that kind of the solution part, and they kind of talked about new urbanism a little bit. But in this one, it can stand by itself. They explain to you the whole peak oil thing a little bit more. I mean, and then they give you stories of real people who are coping in different ways. And one of the ones that really gets to me, it's not gets to me, but affects me, is this gay couple in New York City. And I've met one of the men who is in the film. And they are basically trying to figure out how the heck a place like New York City that mm-hmm. imports everything, that doesn't hardly produce any food in there. I mean, there's a few community gardens here and there, but you got just in the island of Manhattan alone 7 million people who live there, and that doesn't include all the surrounding boroughs. And these guys are really trying to get out. But at the same time, they're gay, and they've. When I had the conversation with the man, he said, like, you know, I'm going to this to the rural parts, and and I'm finding very hard for people to accept that, you know, there's a gay married couple that that wants to move out here. So
like they want a homestead kind of thing?
They want a homestead, and not to get too much away, but in the film you see this man who has never touched a cow is milking a cow. It's just one of the funniest parts of the movie, a documentary. But, you know, I kind of went through a similar thing, and I've kind of chilled out because I honestly want to stay in the city, and I think that at least in Vancouver there's more conscientious people than the last place where I used to live, which was like a sprawling suburbia called Atlanta. I feel like if we spread the word enough, I think that we have a little bit of time to actually get our stuff together and you know, survive this coming energy crunch. But it's going to take some hard decisions. So basically, that's the focus of the movie. Mm-hmm. Like how different people in different parts of North America and the United States are coping.
It's pretty brave to stay in the city. I myself really enjoy, you know, the opportunities that being in close proximity to other humans provides, being in an urban environment. But it may very well, because I mean, the thing about peak oil is not that we're going to run out of oil, but what's going to happen as the shortages start to make things make food extremely expensive and make things difficult. So I think that's pretty brave of you. I know that the director of Escape from Suburbia is actually starting to build a place to live in I believe rural France.
Yep,
He's
getting out. He's way smarter than me.
Well, I'd like to come back and continue talking to you in a second just about this. There was a quote in the movie that says action encourages optimism. So I'd like us to think about that. But in the meantime, maybe start in our heart of hearts to say goodbye to dependency on oil. I'd like to play a song called Motor Oil Shanty by Eight-Eyed Spy. You can turn it up or turn it down. It's going to be loud.
Thank you. eventually that there would be a point reached when global oil supply would not meet demand is not a new idea. The scale of the problem is dreadfully large. We're talking about 84 million barrels of oil per day and rising.
Energy demand now is actually becoming a runaway train.
You know, we're seeing the world's largest oil fields, the super giant fields like Bergan in Kuwait and Cantarell in the Gulf of Mexico, going into decline. Now, are the small fields that we're actually discovering right now, the tiny fields, going to replace production from these super giant fields that were all discovered in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s? We're on an accelerating treadmill here. And the signs are, I think, pretty obvious for anybody to see that we're not going to be able to keep up with that treadmill much longer.
33 of the largest oil producing nations are in permanent, irrevocable, and in some cases, very, very steep decline.
Therefore, we have to start now in order to make an impact in 10, 15 years. And by then, even then, it may already be, by degree, a bit late.
And welcome back to the Pedal Revolutionary Show, 101.9 FM, CITR. We are cyclists talking about oil. Franklin.
What?
Action encourages optimism.
Yes.
Have you heard?
Yeah, I saw it on a billboard for Starbucks.
Really?
No, I'm kidding.
You know what? Nothing surprises me anymore like that. I like this term traction about if people are get active at their local and municipal levels, they actually can find more traction to kind of push for the things that they think need to happen and that are very pressing to happen. Because there doesn't seem to be a lot going on in the media and big government to necessarily address things with the urgency that they need to be addressed. So what would you like to say about a person's ability to change what's going on?
I've never really experienced any traction in any municipal level just because I've been living in big cities all my life. And I found that extremely hard to get engaged in that arena.
Do you mean with the bureaucracy?
Yeah, and
okay.
I've been to a few events here that kind of deal with peak oil, and I've seen pretty much all the mayors from all the surrounding cities of Vancouver involved and coming to these events and talking to people and actually being aware, and that really makes me feel that makes me feel kind of good, right?
Mm.
But Sullivan has been absent, and honestly, I don't know if he was invited or not, or if people thought that he was not going to be interested in this. But I just don't see any action in his realm.
Right, but screw everybody else. Let's talk about citizens.
Citizens, yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
So our individual potential as we work together. What are you doing in your life, or what do you think people should be doing to kind of get things fixed?
Well, honestly, what I do in my life is spread information, and that is my. That is the thing that I do the most and that I do, I think, best to my abilities, right? But when part of the big reason why my wife and myself moved here to Vancouver was because we didn't have to own automobiles. So we both sold our cars, and then we moved here, and then we brought bicycles with us. And that's one huge step that we took. And it might not seem like a big deal to a lot of people, but Atlanta was basically like Los Angeles. It was a place where you actually drove three blocks to see your neighbor. Mm. So that was one big one. Another one, and a lot of people are going to freak out about this, or maybe not, but is we became vegetarians. And by doing that, meat... To produce meat, it takes a lot of oil to actually feed a cow, because mm-hmm. you have to use the oil to make the grain, and then you gotta use the oil to move that grain to the farm where the cow is, and you gotta feed the cow, and so I forget exactly what mm-hmm. how much land it takes to make a steak as mm-hmm. opposed to make a whole bunch of carrots. So that was
what I think is interesting about that is that you're doing it for very pragmatic reasons. It's not like, oh, we can't kill the animals. It's
I love
we don't want to die.
I love shrimp and I love all the foods of the world. But and I truly miss that. I mean, I'm from Puerto Rico. We ate pork like breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Wow, midnight snack.
That's a lot of pork. I really felt that it was going to be the little things that we did that were going to, if we collectively do them, they do add up. And meat is one of those holy cows, pun intended, that a lot of people are saying, no, I got to have my steak. Well, no, you're going to have to stop eating that steak, I'm sorry to say. And I think another thing is that it's time to stop being Mr. Nice Guy. I think we need to start telling people what's up, because it's other people. We are all destroying the world, and not only on the oil thing, where we're just basically eating up all of our best energy, because oil is the most efficient energy there is out there. But we're also destroying the planet by our consumption. So all these things go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And not to get into another tangent, but I think the global warming people and the peak oil people need to get married.
That would be nice. A little ceremony.
Yeah.
You know, they can have the menu can be, the 100-mile diet stuff, and that'd be really sweet. I'd like to just again say to folks that that this movie is going to show tomorrow night. And it's not just a movie, is it? There's a forum as well.
There is a forum, and we have an amazing group of panelists, starting with you, Ms. LaChance.
What? Oh, my God. I got to check my email more often. Go on.
Yeah. we also have the moderator is my good friend, Justin Roller. He's a fuel cell researcher for the NRC, National Research Council, here in Canada. And he's very versed in this whole thing. It's actually after I passed that mind virus about peak oil into his brain, he's become like a total...
He's become sick.
He's become sick. He's a total peak oil master now.
You've ruined him, is what you're saying. You've ruined Justin, your own friend. Okay, go on.
His wife hates me for this, by the way. Hi, Osha. We also have Richard Balfour. He's an engineer and architect, and he is also involved in urban design and also very involved in creating scenarios of different possibilities of what will happen if peak oil happened now, or if it happened 5 years from now, et cetera, et cetera. So there are people within our community who are planning for this. We also have Conrad Schmidt, who is I could call him a leader in the Workless Party. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a pretty amazing book. It's a short read. It's called Workers of the World Relax, The Simple Economics of Less Industrial Work. And
it's basically a pushing for decreasing consumption and lowering of the work week and things like that.
And slowing down the economy. And I think Conrad's book, even though I don't think Conrad is a big proponent of the whole peak oil thing, I think his book is a great it's a great example of the stuff that we need to do as a society. And in the end, we will end up being happier because we're going to have more time to hang out and go to the beach. Then we had Jan Steinman, and he is one of the people in the film. He lives in South Spring Island. He moved there from Portland, from a suburb in Portland. And him and his wife were basically worried, and they said, we want to get the heck out of our suburban mess, and we want to live in a place where we can grow our own food. And he's one of those people, one of the people who was bugging out, essentially, looking for that mini utopia somewhere and trying to make it happen. Then we have John Stonier, who is alternative energy. He's president of Day 4 Energy, Inc., and it's an alternative energy company based in Burnaby. And then Rex Weiler, who is a really well-known journalist and ecologist, and he was also one of the founders of Greenpeace. And this is one of these people who called us and said, "I want to be part of this." And we were like, "We're not worthy."
Wow, awesome! And he lives out on the Sunshine Coast.
In a
community out there that's an alternative community.
Yeah, but I also think he's got a joint here in Vancouver.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, don't quote me on that.
I'm not going to quote you on that.
It's on the radio, though.
It's in the archive. Well, listen, I really appreciate you spending time with us today, Frank, and I guess I have to go there tomorrow. I'll certainly be there, and I encourage everyone to get a sneak preview of this movie, because it should be really interesting and quite quite positive in many ways, which is very refreshing, because I think people are feeling a little bit helpless, and this may help alleviate those feelings. We are going to give away a couple of tickets, so
yes.
We're going to play another clip from the movie, and we're going to let you go, Frank. And while this stuff is playing, if you are out there in Vancouver, then you should call the studio. It's 604-UBC-CITR. Everybody, exercise your fingers. Thanks, Frank, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Peace in the Middle East.
Peace in the Middle East, brother.
Never before in American history have the public and its leaders shown such a lack of resolve or even interest in circumstances that will change forever how we live.
The world's only superpower today. We use a fourth of the world's oil. I think we have an obligation to be the leader, and we just have to hope that our leadership will be followed by the rest of the world. I don't know that we have an alternative.
In a business as usual scenario, I think Congressman Bartlett's right on the money. What we have to do is change the way we do business.
We're really short-sighted thinkers. I used to be an executive, a dot-commer. I have an MBA in finance, and I went to work in the States for a dot-com, and I made and lost a lot of money. And when I came back, I got a job working at an ad agency, and I was doing media buying for clients like Imperial Oil and Coca-Cola. I was influencing people to buy things that they didn't need with money they didn't have. And at that point, I started looking for a way to make a difference. I think that without cheap energy, we're not going to be able to see that sustained economic growth, that sustained growth in the equities market. And I think that Wall Street analysts, they don't understand this. You could sit them down and tie them to a chair and you could use hand puppets to explain it, but they still don't get it. What's happening is you're causing gaskets to blow in their head, smoke's coming out of their ears. When you have a business plan and someone comes in to invest in it, it's 5 years. Like, what are we going to get out of this in 5 years? The business plan we need right now needs to be vast. It needs to be very long-term.
And the critical thing that's going to happen in coming years is that it's going to start to take progressively more energy to find energy, what specialists call the energy return on investment.
It takes energy to get energy. Historically, it's been in the range of 50 to 1 and even more. And imagine if you could get 50 to 1 on a dollar investment. That's been really substantial. And that's what's enabled us to create this amazing way of life that we take for granted, the world of trains, planes, and automobiles, and computers, and electric toothbrushes, and all the rest of it. It's as though we inherited $1 million from Aunt Minnie, and we're down to the last few thousand, and yet we've created a lifestyle for ourselves that depends on this rate of spending that is completely unsustainable.
A lot of people think that what will save us is non-conventional oil of various kinds. Oil, for instance, that's obtained in very deep waters offshore, and oil that's obtained from places like oil shales and tar sands.
With coal and the other low-grade hydrocarbons, that energy return is much lower. And sometimes the peak oil skeptics will say, well, we made the transition from coal to oil, so why shouldn't it be just as easy to make the transition from oil to whatever's next? Well, whatever's next just isn't as good. That's the problem.
Breakthroughs on this and other new technologies.
They said if we just embrace technology.
We have the technology, but just ramping up to make any meaningful contribution is going to take a lot of energy and a lot of time, and we squandered both of them because we didn't pay attention as we should have.
I think it's going to end with everybody changing their habits.
Just start working now, otherwise we won't have time. We're going to be out of oil within a few years.
Natural gas is getting short. Everything's getting short.
When a circuit breaker or fuse blows in our home, it's not because there's no energy available. It's simply that we've called for more energy to be delivered to a given place than the line can take, and the whole system blows. The principle of the household fuse or circuit breaker, keeping supply and demand in near balance, can be extended to all forms of energy. All, in effect, have circuit breakers. And when the demand grows greater than the immediate supply, the circuits break. industrial progress and economic growth was fired by what many seemed to look on as endless energy. But warning signs were there. Until 1950, the United States could supply the energy needed. But in less than 25 years, we found ourselves in trouble. Each year, we used 5% more, doubling our demand every 12 to 14 years. By 1970, we imported one-third of our oil and gas, relying on others to meet new needs. Then in 1973, the big Middle East producers cut off oil shipments to major consuming countries. When the embargo was lifted, the price of foreign oil had jumped from $3 to $12 a barrel, four times higher than before. More than $20 billion left the United States. No one was spared its impact.
We really didn't have a policy with oil until we got into trouble with oil in the 1970s, and we got into big trouble because American oil production peaked in 1970. So at that point, we tried to formulate a coherent policy.
My fellow Americans, in all of the 186 State of the Union messages delivered from this place in our history, this is the first in which the one priority, the first priority, is energy.
All of the subsidies for alternative energy research and implementation that had been put in place during the Carter administration were taken away. And during the Reagan administration, oil prices declined sharply. As a result of that, we started importing even more oil. Not much change during the Clinton administration either.
The Clinton years did more to create a consumer's orgiastic paradise of consumption than anything else.
The fleet efficiency of cars and trucks really went down dramatically, and that was completely consistent with the oil glut in the late 1990s, when oil went to about $10 a barrel, and consistent with the rise of the baby boom wealth phenomenon. So you get this tremendous spending spree for dream houses, which are easy to heat because natural gas is cheap at the time.
And then with the second Bush administration, we had almost immediately a push for an invasion of Iraq, which, of course, has the world's second largest official oil reserves. Then in Bush's State of the Union address in 2006, he uttered the words, addicted to oil.
The first time we encountered even an intimation that there were limits to the oil story in the 1970s, we actually behaved more seriously than we are now. You know, here it is 30 years later. We've had 30 years to get used to this idea and to start paying attention to it, and we're more clueless now than we were in the day of Gerald Ford.
Energy independence
by 1985.
It may be the thing that really undoes us eventually, our simple failure to pay attention.
It sucks computer waste gets stuck in landfills or dumped on poor countries.
Where can I take my old hardware?
Freegee!
Is a volunteer nonprofit run by punks like you. Recycling hardware, sharing skills, and providing access to technology.
Check out freegeekvancouver.org or call 604-879-GEEK.
Free Geek! Helping the needy get nerdy!
Okay, so just again to reiterate, Escape from Suburbia is playing tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m. If you'd like information about that, go to www.submedia.tv/escape. You can see more information, some clips, and some articles that are fantastic. Congratulations to Lisa. You have won yourself a couple tickets to go and see the show for free for everybody else. It's $10 if you buy them in advance, $12 at the door. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today. I do want to wish well to the BC Clets, who are going off on their Velocity Tour. They're taking over the western coast of North America. They're going to be riding and doing a variety of transport methods all the way down to Los Angeles. If you'd like to join join them as they leave town. Tomorrow morning, they'll be doing a 70-kilometer ride from the SkyTrain station, King George SkyTrain station. Bring your ID to cross the border, and if you think you can ride between UBC and Main Street three or four times, you can get to Bellingham. So if you'd like to accompany them on the beginning leg of their tour, please feel free to. You can bring camping gear, or there may be some floor space for you to crash on when you get to Bellingham. Don't bring fruit across the border. So if you'd like more information about that, send us an email, pedalrevolutionary@gmail.com. If you'd like to say anything else, send us an email. And we will see you in a couple weeks, and maybe I will see some of you tomorrow night. We're going to go out with a little song. This song is dedicated to the folks in the suburbs. It's called Lost in the Paradise by Caetano Veloso.
My little grasshopper airplane cannot fly very high. I find you so far from my side. I'm lost in my old green life. Don't help me, my love, my brother, my girl. Just tell my name, just let me say who am I. A big white plastic finger surrounds my dark green hair. But it's not your unknown caress, it's not from your unknown right hand. Oh, don't help me, my love, my brother, my girl. Just tell my name, just let me say who am I. Darkness, my name is Green Wave Death. Salt, South America's my name. World is my name, my size. And under my name, here am I. My little grasshopper airplane cannot fly.
Screen and Van City put on the glitz for the 19th annual Vancouver Queer Film Festival, August 16th to the 26th. Vancouver's largest, most fabulous 11-day arts event brings film lovers and filmmakers together to experience the world's best new independent films about queer lives. Tickets are available at TicketsTonight.ca, Cinemark Tinseltown, Little Sisters Book and Art Emporium, and Black Dog Video. Visit OutOnScreen.com for full film listings. The Vancouver Queer Film Festival, worth coming out for.
thanks for coming to CITR Radio here. I'm filling in for Darren this evening. I'm Dr. Fill-In, so I'm here to solve your problems. Let's start the show, though, with Voyager 1 and a song called Wires.